Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Motorsport Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and of course the wonderful Lawrence Barreto, senior writer for F1.com. We've got to start in Canada with a fantastic Canadian Grand Prix. Lawrence, you were out there and it was high drama.
What a race. I mean, this was a season that needed some drama. And as you said, it was high drama. Sebastian Vettel looked like he was on course to win his first Grand Prix since Belgium last year, end of last summer. Then it all went peak tongue. One mistake cost him. He went across the grass. Lewis thought, hello, I can get in here. And he had a stab around the outside and Sebastian cut him off and that was it.
Very, very controversial decision, of course, with the resultant five-second time penalty as well. We saw that Vettel really wasn't happy. More broadly, how disappointing is this result for Ferrari? Because we spoke a lot last week about how Canada is a circuit that favours that more powerful car. Were they expecting to win?
It's hugely disappointing. Ferrari would have gone there thinking this was our chance to finally get a win on the board. Mercedes, up until that point, had won all six Grand Prix. Ferrari got there. They looked pretty quick through practice. Sebastian Vettel made an absolutely brilliant lap in qualifying to take pole position, because Lewis has really been on form, I think, in qualifying. So for Seb to have beaten him then, and I think on Saturday night, once Seb had got pole, Ferrari would have genuinely believed that they could have taken victory on Sunday. And for 48 laps, I think it was, it looked like he was going to get that victory. And it was just one mistake, like small details in Formula 1 really make things. And it was that one mistake that cost them.
So talk us through this mistake, because it's become a massive talking point, obviously, in the aftermath of the Grand Prix. What happened and what were the repercussions?
So for several laps after the first pit stop, Lewis Hamilton was putting pressure on Sebastian Vettel. It looked like he had the edge. It looked like he was the faster driver. So Sebastian Vettel was actually doing a pretty good job of backing Lewis up, or, you know, maintaining the lead. And then they got to the first chicane and Sebastian Vettel just got the braking wrong. He went too fast into the corner, lost the rear ends, skated across the grass. Now, it's not often, actually, in Formula 1 tracks these days you get grass on the inside of these corners. It's normally gravel, or more predominantly it's asphalt. So he went across the grass. He had to ease off the gas because you can't accelerate through grass. You'd lose the car. Lost slightly control of the car. And as he skated back onto the circuit, he obviously went back into the path of Lewis Hamilton, who had managed to negotiate the corner properly. As Sebastian moved across the track, the gap was closing between where Lewis thought he could have squeezed his car. The stewards deemed that he rejoined in an unsafe manner. You could see that Sebastian, as he came onto the track, he was out of control, but then there was that moment where he kind of got the control back and then straightened the car up. And he would have known at that point, as he looked into his mirror, that Lewis was right there and Lewis had to slam on the brake. So in many ways, it was a slam dunk for the stewards. Those are the rules. You can't rejoin in an unsafe manner, and that's exactly what he did.
It's a really tough one, though, because Vettel, of course, came out of this feeling very, very hard done by. The question, the biggest question of all, was the resultant penalty fair? Because it sounds like he made an honest mistake.
It was a mistake, and the quickest route isn't to cut across the grass, so he definitely wouldn't have wanted to do that. But he's a racing driver, and he would have known that Lewis was going to be coming around that corner much quicker, because he'd obviously done the corner properly. And he didn't want to give up the lead, because, as we were saying, this was a Grand Prix Ferrari should have won. And Seb hasn't gone this long from between winning races for a very long time. So he wanted this victory. So you can probably, all of this is processing in his head. He's going, right, what am I going to do? And we're talking split seconds he's going to have to make these decisions. And as he kind of went back onto the track, the thing is, if he'd even shown just the slightest desire to maybe move the steering wheel slightly to the left to show that he was at least trying to get out of Lewis's way, show awareness that Lewis was there, I think he might have got away with it, actually. But as it was, the way that he came back on, the stewards have deemed that he actually knew what he was doing by blocking Lewis.
Well, this is the thing, and there have been lots of people on social media slowing down the video from within Vettel's car, where he can be seen to quite deliberately input a little right as he's coming across, allegedly to block Hamilton. Does that not mean that, come on, he's got to be penalised?
Well, but yeah, but you've got to remember that the car at this point is out of control, so he would be putting a little bit of luck towards the right in order just to regain control of the car. I think the damning piece of footage is the bit that he looks into his mirror, so he's very much aware of where Lewis
Ooh,
is.
There's someone coming behind me. Oh, my car's out of control. I'll go a bit right, and yeah, just a bit more right, just to be sure. Just to be sure, we don't want anyone in danger.
Well, I guess that's definitely one way of looking at it.
So the big question from your point of view, though, is to put you on the spot. Was he guilty of an offence? Did he deserve this penalty?
By the letter of the law, he was guilty of this offence and he deserved this penalty. We've seen before last year with Max Verstappen and Kimi Raikkonen. Max did the same thing. He got a 5-second penalty. Unfortunately, that's where we are with it. That's what the rules are. And if the drivers have called for tougher, they want tougher rules to make sure that people can't get away with it. Because if it was the other way around, if Sebastian hadn't got the penalty, you'd have had Lewis complaining and saying that he came back on track. So you can't have it both ways.
You say by the letter of the law, he's guilty. If you personally were the one making the decision, would you have given him this penalty?
Well, if I was a steward, I'd have to stick by the letter of the law. So I would have to give him the penalty. But I think there's a lot to be said about whether you give him the benefit of the doubt. Mm. And as he was skating across the grass, again, something that you don't really see very often, maybe you do say in this instance, because the car was out of control for a long period of time, maybe you just give him the benefit of that he, you know, he didn't really mean to do it.
And given where we are in the F1 season, the dominance of Hamilton, the dominance of Mercedes, and the fact that this was an opportunity for Ferrari to get back into things, from a neutral point of view, are people happy to see Vettel get this taken away from him?
No, I actually think it's the opposite. I think the reason why we've had this outcry and we've had this reaction on social media, and we've also had this reaction from ex-drivers, I think the majority of ex-drivers that I've seen have been completely against the penalty. And I think if it was the other way around and maybe Lewis had done this to Sebastian, I don't think it would have been so bad. But I think because it's happened this way around, the fans just want to see a fight.
It's and more interesting, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. And we've seen that Ferrari haven't been able to do that very often. So this was their one chance.
Mm. And there's also, of course, the ongoing debate in the sport more broadly about the extent to which people are overtaking less than perhaps they have in the past. That's obviously, for the untrained eye, one of the most interesting, exciting parts of the sport. This kind of passing, whilst dangerous, is a good spectacle, and the neutral will want to see it.
I mean, the fact that we're here talking about it now and that we've been reading on social media how people are talking about it, how people are responding to it either in and outside of the sport, I think is a great thing in the short term, I think, for Formula One. I think long term, you probably do have to think about what we do going forward, because you want the drivers to race. And Sebastian Vettel was talking about this after the race on Sunday in the press conference, where he kind of said, well, as I was growing up, I used to watch Formula One. And I used to love the way that drivers would really go for it, and there weren't that many penalties. Like, penalties were very rare back in those days. These days, he's saying it's very different, and he's almost, drivers, I guess, are almost worried about getting penalised. That might mean they might even back off doing a certain move because they're worried about the penalty. It's a bit of a shame if we get to that point, I think, because, like you just said, people want to see racing. I want to see racing. You want to see racing. And I think that kind of moment, the very fact that we're talking about this moment, we would have talked about that, whether there was a penalty or not. I think that's the point here. I think that's what was exciting about it. And even if Sebastian had held off Lewis for the rest of the race and there hadn't been a penalty and Lewis hadn't got ahead, that was a thrilling race. Like, we had the two main title contenders fighting for the lead of a Grand Prix. That hasn't happened very often. And I think we should have been making... I would like to have been here, sitting here, talking about that and talking about how exciting Formula One is, rather than the penalty, unfortunately.
Mm. And of course, when there is drama of that kind, we inevitably find ourselves talking about, was Vettel robbed, rather than how good a performance was this from Hamilton? How good was he as far as you're concerned?
Well, you see, I think so far this season, Lewis Hamilton's been average. Now, he's actually used that word, so I'm not just calling him average. But I don't think that Lewis has driven to the standard to which we've come to expect yet. And yet he's still winning. And I guess you've got to except that Lewis's average is just better than most drivers anyway. He's made a few mistakes across the year in terms of just not really being on the pace. Here in Canada, he made a massive mistake in Friday practice where he had the crash, which ultimately led to a hydraulic leak, which ultimately led to the team still rebuilding their car up to a few minutes before the start of a race. That's almost unheard of in Formula One these days, to be rushing around trying to put these complex cars back together. I think Toto Wolff said the car was in 1,000 bits. Like, there's a lot of car parts that make up a Formula One car, and for a team to having to be doing that and making sure there's no errors is massive. And then he still went and won the race. I think it's phenomenal, and he did it on a circuit where, as we were saying, Ferrari should have been pretty strong. They had an advantage of around 0.6 seconds on the straight. 0.6 seconds is in Formula One is huge, and the fact that they had that, and Mercedes have still found a way, obviously through the corners, to be quicker, is mighty, mighty impressive.
Glorious stuff. That's something that we'll be touching on later in the show. Is this just Hamilton's season? Is he going to have success on all fronts? But the issue with Vettel isn't going away. There is an appeals process that we're now going to go through. Coming up, let's have a chat about that. How likely is it that Ferrari will see this penalty rescinded? And also, how about his response? Is that what we're after?
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Motorsport Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Lawrence Barreto, senior writer for F1.com. We've been talking about the very controversial penalty issued to Sebastian Vettel during the Canadian Grand Prix. There is now an appeals process to go to. We saw after the race that Vettel really wasn't happy. We heard on the mic during the race that he was certainly displeased, and Ferrari are similarly unimpressed. They have appealed against that 5-second penalty. It cost him victory, so this is a high-stakes appeal. What's the process?
So what the team had to do before the end of play on Sunday after the race was at least tell the FIA that they intend to appeal, and that gives them 96 hours to put forward a case with evidence as to why they should take it to the International Court of Appeal. Sounds very grand, doesn't it?
Very grand.
And the idea is that this evidence that they've got to submit to the FIA has to be different to what they perceive the FIA stewards had when they were making the decision during the race.
Right, so they've got to show them something new.
Exactly. So it might be steering movements that they can show. It might be throttle maps. It could be anything that they feel proves or at least gives reason to believe that Sebastian didn't do what the stewards are saying that he did. He didn't commit the offence.
Have they got a defence? Because you yourself have said that, listen, on paper, it was an offence. It seems to me that with all the conversation that's coming out of this, this is a broader question of the direction that F1 is moving in, mm-hmm. and whether it is being too focused on the fine letter of the law. If this appeal is about whether he was guilty, well, he was.
Well, I guess it depends on the exact wording of the regulation to which they've determined that he's guilty. And I think with regulations, I guess, across anything, they're always open to interpretation. Now, if there's a way that they can show that he didn't rejoin the track in an unsafe manner, but the looks of it, it did look like he did. But if there's a way that they can show that he didn't, then they will have a case.
If he'd done that in his driving test, his normal driving test, he'd have failed.
He would have done, yes, but then
which is enough for me, frankly.
Yeah, but these days we've got VAR. You know,
we've got
all these kind of all this technology where we can look back at things and go back into real detail. I think this is the very fact that we weren't talking about this 10, 20, 30 years ago because we didn't have this technology. So that incident happens, you see that in that split second, and you make a decision there and then. And I think if you'd had to make the decision there and then, I think he probably would have got away with it. I think it's just because of the more time to look at it, analyse it, that's probably why he's got the penalty in the end.
I think the fact that you mentioned VAR is very interesting because even when a referee has the potential to go back and change a decision, or when, for example, a red card is rescinded after a game, okay, you've rescinded that decision, the suspension isn't there, but you still change the course of the result at the time. There is no going back and changing that. Obviously, we could hear on the mic that Vettel was furious during the race. He was absolutely livid. Do you think, regardless of whether the penalty gets overturned, the result's going to have been changed because that affects how you race during the event?
So I guess wonder, yeah, you're right, because Lewis, technically, once the penalty had been awarded, wouldn't have pushed Seb as hard as he would have done if he didn't have the penalty, because he, at that point, if he didn't have the penalty, he would have still tried to push to win.
Yeah.
So you're right, so the rest of the race would have changed. I guess that's another reason why the chances of this appeal succeeding are unlikely. I guess you've got to look at the penalty itself and how, what form it takes. Normally with those time penalties, you take it at the end of a pit stop, unless you don't pit again. And obviously that's why the time was applied at the end of the race, and that's right. why the positions were swapped in the classification once they've swapped over. Maybe the rule has to be that if you're determined to have picked up a punishment, you have to give the place up there and then on track, and then at least Sebastian would have had the chance to then
to reclaim it.
Rather than having this weird kind of final few laps where Lewis has to stay within 5 seconds to get it, but he doesn't have to overtake, and Sebastian has to stretch ahead by 5 seconds if he wants to get the lead. I guess that could be a potential way of doing it. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, to be honest, but I think what we've got now is definitely open for debate.
Absolutely. Let's talk a bit about Vettel's response during the race, after the race, to this penalty. Talk us through his behaviour.
Extraordinary, really. He stopped his... The first thing he did is stopped his car in the wrong place at this end of the pit lane, when he should have really taken it underneath the podium, parked up in formation with the top three cars. That gave him some time, crucially, to perhaps clear his head, because it must have been quite intense inside that helmet, inside the cockpit. So it gave him a few minutes to walk down the pit lane, get some fresh air, think about what he was going to do. Then he went into the paddock, obviously spoke to people who would have said, Seb, you need to go to the podium. That's probably the best thing, course of action at the moment. So he walked back through the Mercedes garage, not the Ferrari garage, which I think is interesting, because it probably means that he didn't want to see any of his team, and that he didn't want anyone to calm him down or like maybe try too hard to change what he wanted to do thereafter. Walked out, swapped the number boards, which are placed in front of the top three cars.
So, I mean, he had a tantrum, Lawrence.
I don't know. See, I think this is quite a low-key tantrum.
Like, it's low-key, but it's still, in terms of his actual behaviour, you can't decide where you finished.
No, but hang on. A tantrum would be like when Michael Schumacher went down the pit lane in Belgium with David Coulthard and looked like he wanted to lamp him. Like, that's a proper tantrum, when he's shouting and throwing probably all sorts of accusations at someone else. A strop might be a better word. I'll let you have that. Okay, you can have a strop.
Okay, we're agreed.
You're right, you can't do that. You can't go around moving boards. But I think it was quite a symbolic thing to do, because he was essentially sending a message to the FIA. This is what I thought. I'm not going to come and shout at you. I'm not going to come and moan and say this, that and the other. He was just trying to show how he felt in that moment. And it was quite a nice thing to do. And then he went up onto the podium, and there was that awkward moment where Lewis kind of pulled him up onto the top step, and they briefly kind of both stood there, and then Seb stood down. And it's in those moments, those rare awkward moments, it was quite painful to watch, I think, because they're both trying to do the right thing there, and they've clearly got a lot of respect for each other. So he did that, and then he calmed down quite a lot after the race. Like, he was very honest. He spoke to the media in a way that many drivers might not wanted to speak to the media. They might not wanted to talk about what they'd just done.
That is part of the job, right?
It definitely is, but that doesn't always mean that drivers will do it. You know, no. Sometimes they'll cancel sessions. I've been at races where Vettel's one of them, who he's had a bad race and he cancels his media session. Like, these things happen. But he stayed, and he articulately explained why he was angry, why he was upset, without kind of throwing his toys out of the pram and getting aggressive. I guess that's it. It's the level of aggression. He was trying to do it in a more grown-up way. And I actually think that Seb's struggled a little bit, I think, with trying to get people to warm to him. And I think the way that he handled himself after this race is really going to help people warm to him a little bit more. And I wonder whether... I know it's not going to directly affect what happens on track, but I wonder whether this might potentially help him try to get this tougher mindset and maybe feel better about where he is in Formula One going forward. Because I feel like there's been too many cracks this year, and especially towards the back end of last year, where I'm not sure these days whether Sebastian's strong enough to be a proper title contender.
So you think that the psychology is the problem?
I think so, because I think the mistakes that he's made this year, when there was in Bahrain where he just spanned by himself, and there were suggestions of, oh, there was a gust of wind, and then there was other suggestions of, oh, he was just too heavy on the pedal. And then this mistake in Canada, like, at the end of the day, I know we're talking about the penalty, but he made another mistake when he was leading the race. And this never would have happened if he'd made that corner. And he's making too many mistakes. And I appreciate it's a high-pressured environment. And I appreciate that he's driving for Ferrari, one of the biggest teams in the world, and it's all, the pressure's always going to be worse there. But I just feel that in terms of the way that he's dealing with it versus, say, a Lewis and the same kind of pressures, Seb's on the other end of the spectrum, and he's just making too many mistakes. And when you don't have the best car consistently, you just can't afford that against a team that's operating as highly as Mercedes and a driver that's driving as well as Lewis Hamilton.
Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens with Ferrari's appeal. And talking about the difference in psychology between Vettel and Lewis Hamilton, coming up, let's touch on Lewis. He seems to have not a single crack in him. We were tipping him not to get the result in Canada. He did. Can he take it forward?
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to Johnny Burrow and Lawrence Barreto, senior writer for F1.com, here on Love Sport Radio for the Motorsport Show. And Lewis, we've talked a lot about the runner-up of the Canadian Grand Prix. Let's talk about the rather controversial winner, Lewis Hamilton. Another race where he won against all odds, really, sort of out of nowhere as well, given that penalty. Is this just his year? It seems that he can do no wrong.
It's starting to look like this is Lewis Hamilton's year. And for a driver of his ability and his talent, we can't deny him that. I think in years gone by, we've seen Lewis at his very, very best. We haven't quite seen him at his best, and yet he's won 5 out of the 7 races this year. If he keeps going at this level, he's going to win 15 races, and no driver's ever done that in the season. At the moment, Lewis, Sebastian Vettel and Michael Schumacher hold the record at 13 races in a season. So if Lewis goes and does that, there's just been, he's running out of records to break at this rate. He's been in good, solid form, I'd say, this year, and without being spectacular. And I think that's what's impressed me the most, is that things are just working out well for him. In Canada, he had this crash in Friday practice, and Lewis doesn't really make mistakes. We were having this chat, actually, the day before, me and a few colleagues, where we were like, so when was Lewis's last mistake? And it's really hard to go back and pick out when he's made massive errors, where it's damaged the rest of his weekend. And then, lo and behold, obviously, the next day he put the car in the wall. But it's but it's just really rare. Now, I'm not going to take any blame for that, by the way.
No, of course not.
But he did that, and many drivers, that would ruin the rest of their weekend because they're like, oh, we've just missed a crucial session of practice. Not Lewis. Like, he was back on the pace the next morning. The team were calm because they were like, well, this is Lewis Hamilton, so, like, he's going to be fine. Gets into qualifying. Admittedly, he didn't take pole position, and that might be an element of, there might be an element in that he didn't feel so comfortable, and that might be why he didn't might have that cutting edge right at the end of it, but then still take nothing away from Sebastian Vettel. But he starts second on the grid, so, like, on a bad day, Lewis Hamilton starting second on the grid, I mean,
I'd
take that if I was a Formula One driver on a bad day. I'm not a Formula One driver, but
yet Lawrence, the dream is alive.
So then you look at the rest of the race, and Sebastian was the quicker driver, really. And the Ferrari was the better car. And
was he robbed?
Was Seb robbed?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think he was. I guess you partly robbed himself, but I think he also was robbed by a decision that could have gone the other way. And there was lots of people out there who were saying he was robbed, and I can see, you know, this isn't a cut and dry thing. But yeah, I would agree with that, I think.
We, of course, always have our Name That Race feature, Race of the Week. This is where Lawrence gives me, and of course you, the listener, clues of a specific race at a specific circuit in a specific year. They narrow it down with each clue, and we've got to try and get it right. Lawrence, let's have our first clue for this week.
So it's the Canadian Grand Prix at the Circuit Gilles Villeneuve, and the first clue is, at over 4 hours, it's the longest race in Formula One history. So over 4 hours, it's the longest race in Formula One history.
You'd be tired, wouldn't you? The longest race in Formula One history. What was it? Get in touch. 0208 7020 558 is that number to call, or WhatsApp. It's at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. And we have another glorious weekly feature as well. It's our unsung hero. And this week, Lawrence, you'd like to draw attention to Lance Stroll.
Yes. So Lance Stroll's had a bit of a rough deal, I think, since he's come into Formula One. He's the son of Lawrence Stroll, a billionaire in the fashion industry.
That doesn't sound like a tough start. As tough sports go, oh, my dad's a billionaire.
I mean, his lifestyle goes, it's pretty good. I don't think he's complaining on that front. But I think because of that, he's had a tougher time because people have said that he's got to Formula One because of his dad. And to be honest, it's difficult to argue against that. I mean, he is now racing at the team that his dad owns.
Always good.
Yep. Well, helpful. I guess I wonder what the chat would be over the dinner table.
Yeah.
But he's had a tough couple of races, a couple of seasons rather, with Williams, and he's joined Racing Point, which is the team that his dad, Lawrence, owns. And they've not had a great car this year, not yet anyway, and they're traditionally probably a top four, five sort of car. And yet this year he's managed to get points three times. And the reason why I've picked him out this week is because in Canada, he just delivered a really strong race. I would say one of the top five out of the 20 drivers in that race. That's how good that race was. He made
relative to his car.
Relative to his car, exactly. I think that's the best way you can do this because the cars are so different these days. A Lewis getting a second, but then driving badly. And then a Lance Stroll getting a ninth, but driving out of his skin. You could argue that Lance had had a better weekend all round because he just got the most out of his package. And I think this weekend he impressed. He had the better strategy versus his teammate, Sergio Perez, but he made it work, and that's what you've got to do in Formula One. Your opportunities don't come around very often, and he bolted a set of hard tyres on, which are very durable and which you can run really long. He managed to run very deep into the race, setting competitive lap times, and that hauled him from 17th on the grid up into the top 10. That kind of performance. He pitted, that dropped him back a little bit, but he managed to catch Carlos Sainz right at the death and got ninth place. And for that, I think I wanted to pick it out because I think he gets a hard time these days. Yeah. It was a good weekend all round.
And if he is outperforming the quality of the car he's driving, then surely he is there on merit, isn't he?
Well, he's got to do it consistently now because then I can throw some other stats at you which are less favourable.
Right.
So, for example, he's been knocked out of qualifying in the first segment of qualifying for the last 11 races.
But his dad forgives him because he loves him very much.
Every time, and he believes in him.
Well, that's always good. That's all we can ask for from our parents or indeed from our bosses. It must be rather odd when they are the same person. But a boss who probably isn't delighted this week will be those at Ferrari, expected to get a result at the Canadian Grand Prix. Could it be the start of a comeback? It didn't work for them. They didn't get the win we were expecting and as neutrals hoping for, but the signs were there. This was more positive. That powerful engine did come into its own, and the next few circuits could benefit Ferrari. Coming up, we'll be asking Stuart Codling, executive editor for F1 Racing and Autosport, whether the comeback could be on.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Motorsport Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Lawrence Barreto, senior writer for F1.com. I'm delighted to say that we're also joined on the line by Stuart Codling, executive editor for F1 Racing and Autosport. Good evening, Stuart. Thanks for joining us. Wasn't the result that Ferrari wanted in Canada, but still, there were positive signs there. Could this be the start of a comeback?
Well, it's tricky to say, really, because you can say that they did show a sort of increased level of performance. But at the end of the day, they've shown an increased level of performance since the beginning of the year and squandered it every time. And that's what they did in Canada. And once again, it was a mistake that kind of blew it. And you've seen with Mercedes that sometimes they've had dominant positions or sort of edgy dominant positions. They've made mistakes, but they've had that sort of strength and depth to be able to gather it up and move from there and carry on winning.
I feel that you're right. What you said, Codders, is exactly right. I think that if I try to find some positives, is that they had a weekend where at least they got two cars on the podium on a track that they should have really delivered on. And I know that Sebastian Vettel didn't ultimately win the race, but he at least showed that they had the pace to win. The interesting thing, there were a couple of things that did stand out to me, though. In the interviews after the race, Matteo Binotto said, "We forgot to tell Charles Leclerc that Sebastian Vettel had a penalty." Like, I know there's a lot going on at that point in the race, but forgetting to tell one of your drivers that the other driver's got a penalty and therefore he could potentially have nicked a second place is an extraordinary thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there's so much to kind of consider there, isn't there? Because what would they have actually done if they'd had the presence of mind to inform Leclerc? So I suppose stepping back from that for a moment and taking a wider view in terms of Ferrari's race operations, until that point, I kind of thought they'd had a good race in terms of them, or a good whole race weekend, as it were, because the track was pretty dirty to begin with. It didn't really work with their car, and they kind of weren't getting the performance they expected. And kind of Ferrari of old, you know, you might almost have expected there to have been a management reshuffle by Saturday morning because they weren't sort of going as well as they'd expected. But they were kind of patient and they waited for the track to come to them. And as it rubbered in, the performance came to them. And that, to me, at that point, sort of showed to me a different side of Ferrari. It was a Ferrari that wasn't panicking under pressure and losing its head. And then, you know, when he divulged after the race that they'd kind of all gone a little bit loco and forgotten to tell Leclerc the score, I kind of thought, oh, that's actually quite disappointing, because that was a really important point, because if they wanted to support Vettel, they really needed to tell Leclerc to back off and preserve his sort of net second place, as it were. And by not telling him, they sort of left him hanging in limbo. You might almost have said they could have told him that the penalty was coming. Could you put a bit of pressure on Lewis, please, to try and force Lewis to make a mistake and enable Sebastian to escape? So in many ways, that was a really missed opportunity for them.
I do wonder also if they'd played, because they left Charles out a little bit longer and that lost him a bit more time. And I wonder if they'd pitted him slightly earlier, whether he would have been closer to Lewis and Sebastian, and whether he could have actually played some sort of role. Because if he was closer, maybe like you were saying, he could have put more pressure on Lewis, and that would have had an impact on the amount of pressure that they ended up putting on. He ended up putting on Sebastian. I think it's interesting what you were saying about how they had a strong race. I think that's one thing that would be really good, that if they can kind of build on that, aside from the fact that they had that moment of madness, but if they can really build on that on the next couple of races, France, Austria, Silverstone, hopefully these are circuits that Ferrari should at least be able to deliver on.
Well, we really need that to happen, don't we? Because we're looking at a picture of Mercedes dominance against all expectation, and Ferrari have the tools to do the job, and certainly two of the first four races they should have won at circuits that favoured them. That you can say that they should have won in Canada as well. So as we look towards this run of circuits, as you say, that possibly favours the Ferrari package, the onus is on them to actually deliver this time.
Stuart, do you think that these circuits do favour Ferrari, and if so, why?
Well, Paul Ricard particularly has long straights which favour the Ferrari technical package. They've really gone for sort of low drag and low downforce and favouring straight line speed. And I think a lot of the kind of the slower, more technical sections are areas where you can kind of park the bus if you've got a car that's not very draggy. So that makes it a circuit that appeals to them, because they've got that sort of rocket ship pace in a straight line. And then they can kind of, you know, be a little bit obstructive in the slower bits and carry that speed onto the straights. So that should work for them. Silverstone as well, although it does have technical sections, it's not a circuit that's really very heavy on braking. So you've got a lot of corners, for instance, Stowe, that comes at the end of the hangar straight, where it's almost a lift and a dab. So if you've got enough straight line speed, you're not really asking that much of the car in terms of its slow corner performance. Austria as well is a fiddly circuit, so if you can I would imagine if they can maybe secure pole there, they can once again to labour the metaphor of parking the bus. Once you've got track position in Austria, you can kind of dominate the flow of the race. Providing
you would
you
struggle to win it in a bus
court,
though,
curbs.
Parked or otherwise. I mean, you're not keeping up, are you?
No. When you look at the development parts they've been bringing to the car, They've been kind of rowing back on them a few times. So we've seen new bits appearing on the car during practice and then coming off again, which kind of suggests that they're not actually seeing the performance on track that they anticipated in simulation. And that can run one or two ways. When they take those parts off, it's not necessarily the case that they're underperforming. They might actually be kind of overperforming. And as any sort of good technical director will tell you, bad correlation is bad correlation between the simulator and the track. So if you're getting better results than you expected, that can almost be as much of a warning sign as underperformance.
Stuart, as a final question for you, whether it's Ferrari or someone else, whether it's Red Bull, for example, can anybody challenge Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton?
I think really, given the way it's going, unless Red Bull bring out a completely new car in time for the next phase of the European season, it's really up to Ferrari to kind of, you know, take the pin out of the grenade and roll it under the door of this season, because otherwise we're looking at another really, really unexpected season of Mercedes dominance. I don't think anyone could have expected that after testing. It's the way these first few races have unfolded has been a huge surprise.
I think if we're going for a little bit of hope, Red Bull ended up winning in Austria. I know that it was circumstantial more than anything, but then we've also got Hungary just before the end of the before the summer break, and that's an opportunity there for Red Bull to hopefully deliver a strong result. But I would agree with you, Stuart, in that at the moment Ferrari and Red Bull's threat just hasn't been as serious as I think we were hoping for, at least in pre-season testing. The signs were just much brighter at that point, and it kind of seems like they've both tailed off while Mercedes have gone in the other direction. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over these next three races, if Ferrari can at least start taking some bigger points and converting some of that performance advantages that they should have at particular circuits.
Yeah, because I'm not sure we can rely on Valtteri Bottas to take too many points off Lewis Hamilton. Hopefully he can kind of regather himself and present a bit more of a threat to his teammate. You would kind of hope that Red Bull would be able to find something. I think they're actually quite disappointed in their car. It's been very interesting the way it's gone. I mean, you know, Lawrence, you've been to a few more races than me this year, but the feeling I've had from the three or four I've been to is that they aren't quite ready to hand Pierre Gasly his P45, and they've been full of praise for the job Max Verstappen's been doing. And the feeling I've got is that Verstappen is maybe kind of overperforming the car, getting more out of it than they expected, and maybe the actual sort of the level of performance of the car, as it were, is closer to where Pierre Gasly is. He's looked a bit more fragile, hasn't been able to put too many race weekends together, but the kind of performances he's put in where he's kind of in that wasteland, the hinterland between the top two and the midfield, is kind of where that car deserves to be. And the one crumb of pleasure we can extract from that maybe is that they haven't started going hammer and tongs for Honda yet. The Honda seem to have done a job and have brought something this year that maybe a lot of teams weren't expecting. Bit of an embarrassment for McLaren, you'd say.
Fascinating stuff, Stuart. Thank you ever so much for your time. Stuart Codling there, executive editor for F1 Racing and also Sport. Interesting to hear his take on the upcoming race, of course, at the French Grand Prix, that could favour Ferrari, perhaps more than Mercedes. Coming up, let's nail down a little bit into the details of that circuit. We're going to be chatting to Chris Medlin, F1 correspondent for Racer.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Motorsport Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Lawrence Barreto, senior writer for F1.com. And we do, of course, have this week's edition of Name That Race. Lawrence, let's have a couple more clues, see if we can guess it.
Right, here we go. So Jenson Button and Lewis Hamilton, so they were then McLaren teammates, collided. And then Jenson Button in the same race pitted six times.
I think I do actually remember this one. If you listening in think you know which it was, get in touch. It's 0208 7020 558 to call or WhatsApp. And it's at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. And I'm delighted to say also that we're joined on the line by Chris Medland, F1 correspondent at Racer. Good evening, Chris. Thanks for joining us. We're looking ahead to the French Grand Prix, and of course the focus is on the nature of this circuit and how Ferrari can do there. Do you think it favours their car?
Evening, guys. I was just listening to Codders talk about this one, and I'm not quite so convinced. I mean, there are some good little straights at Paul Ricard that will definitely help Ferrari, but there's also some pretty high-speed corners too, and some long corners where they've been losing time compared to Mercedes, and it's that balance. We saw in Montreal, and I think Lawrence mentioned it earlier in the show, that because the straights, Ferrari making such gains, and Mercedes weren't able to quite make up the difference in the corners, and that's because they were chicanes and short corners. There weren't many corners where you spend a lot of time in them to make up huge amounts of time, and there's just a few more corners that allow that in Paul Ricard. So I think it's got to be closer, and probably one that it's not necessarily that it suits Mercedes more than Ferrari, but Mercedes' car is just better than the Ferrari all round at the moment. Straight line speed is the only way it lacks. So I think at this circuit, it's probably going to be one that Mercedes will be favourite heading into it.
But I think at the very least, we can probably hope that Ferrari are going to at least be close, or close enough that they can pick up the pieces if Mercedes make any mistakes. I was looking at some data ahead of the last race in Canada, and that was suggesting that Ferrari would close the gap and be in contention in Canada. They would be a little bit off where they were in Canada and France, but then in Austria, that they'd have a really good chance of being on top again there. And that's based on GPS data. So I guess the key thing is just that they're close enough that they can challenge in a race. What we don't want is Mercedes to just be able to run away with it. And I think that at least if the French Grand Prix and that long Michelin straight offers the opportunity for Ferrari to at least make some gains in that area, that could at least open up the potential of a good race. And after what happened with Sebastian and Lewis in Canada, I think that's definitely what we need. We need the top two drivers racing each other.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that Paul Ricard does have going for it, like you say, there's the Michelin straight, which is a huge back straight, but also at the start, it's a decent run down to turn one and a decent little braking zone. So a car that's quick in the straight line, it's going to be dangerous into the first corner. So if Ferrari can make sure that it's at least lining up directly behind Mercedes with Vettel and Leclerc, you know, if they can lock out the second row at least, then the start of the race will provide opportunities for them to mix it and maybe disrupt things. And as you say, we saw in Canada that they could do it. Unfortunately, Seb's error and then the penalty means they didn't get the result from it. But this is the one that, of the three races that we're now in the middle of, Mercedes would say, OK, we should try and make sure we win Ricard, because perhaps it's more likely that Ferrari are going to get the wins in Montreal and Austria. So it's definitely a spell of races where Ferrari should be able to rattle Mercedes' cage a little bit. And as you guys were mentioning earlier, they need to if they're going to make this championship a little bit more interesting.
Chris, of course, we're seeing significant fallout from that penalty for Vettel in Canada. Do you think that he could experience some kind of overhang in France? Still be frustrated, still be psychologically annoyed with the decision? Could it impact his performance?
No, I don't think so too much. I mean, he'll have 2 weeks to sort of settle down and get back to business. And obviously the way a race weekend goes, Seb will probably talk a lot about it on the Thursday during the media sessions, and that might put it in his mind again. But then you've got 3 hours worth of practice on a Friday where, you know, you're not racing, your competitive juices aren't flowing, you're driving a Formula One car and quickly, so the adrenaline is up, but you're still just doing the job and methodically testing items and trying to set the car up properly. So he'll get back into the normal mindset pretty quickly by the end of Friday, and I think he'll settle down pretty well there. It will be a race, though, that he'll want to put right a few wrongs from last year, because Seb made a mistake at the start of this race and hit Valtteri Bottas at turn one 12 months ago, and that damaged his opportunity to finish certainly in the top three in that race, and it cost him the championship lead at the time. But it's just a remarkable turnaround that a year ago we were looking at Vettel leading the championship coming to this race, and now we're going into it with Mercedes having won every single Grand Prix this year.
You mentioned that moment with Bottas at the start last year. I do wonder if that will be in his mind as they're running down to that first corner, especially as he has just been penalised by the stewards in that last race. But I think you made a good point about like how he'll be able to put it out of his mind going into France. And if anything, I think there'll be an element of bounce in a weird way from Canada, because I know that he didn't come away with the result that he wanted, but I feel like he came out of it as one of the stronger characters. I think the fans will have appreciated the way that he dealt with the whole situation after the race. He was very humble, showed a lot of respect to Lewis, and I think that perhaps if he tries to look at all the positives that he got from that weekend and the way that he handled himself right up until that mistake, I think there is a lot of positives to take that will actually help him going into France.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think, if anything, his popularity will have increased after Canada, because largely it seems that most fans feel Vettel was wronged in that race. And when they saw him openly show how annoyed he was with the penalty and show some emotion, then people got on board with that. And I think so some people will see it as if he can have a good result in Paul Ricard, that'll be a bit of justice for him, and there'll be a lot of goodwill behind Seb. So, yeah, I think he, if anything, it could turn into a positive bit of momentum for him in terms of sort of support and goodwill. But at the end of the day, you're still then limited by your machinery. And if Mercedes come out firing in Paul Ricard, they obviously had a new engine update themselves in Canada, and they had some issues with it. So there'll be 2 weeks now where Mercedes are looking at what went wrong with that power unit. Lance Stroll's failed during practice, and Lewis obviously had his hydraulic issue after his accident. But there's work to be done for Mercedes. But if that means that they fine-tune things a little bit more and a little bit stronger, then there's only so much Seb can do. He can only work with the tools he's given.
And Chris, just finally, if you had to tip one team, one racer to win it in France, who would you go for?
I'm going to be boring and say Lewis Hamilton. It's hard to not say Mercedes, isn't it, when they've won all the races up to now. And as Lawrence said, Lewis has not maybe been at his absolute best all year, but there's been flashes of his sort of brilliant level that he can perform at. And this Canada was a race where Ferrari should have won, and Lewis was right there putting the pressure on Sunday, because I think he was during that race performing at that high level. So, yeah, I think I'm going to go for another Hamilton win.
Yeah, he's very, very hard to argue with, isn't he? Chris, lovely to speak to you. Thanks ever so much for your time. Chris Medlin there, F1 correspondent for Racer. Do you agree with him, Lawrence? Do you think this is going to be another day for Lewis?
I think so. And I say that almost with an air of resignation. But I'd like to think that Sebastian's going to push him close. I really do think that he's going to have a bounce on this. And I really do think he's going to be able to push him. I just think that at the moment, though, Lewis has got this edge. It all comes down to qualifying and whether Seb can put his car in front to start with. Because I think if he can do that, he's not going to make the same mistake twice. Or at least I'd like to think he's not going to make the same mistake twice. And I think the most important thing, looking ahead to France and just the next couple of races, and I've said this a few times, but I just feel like we're going to get a more competitive season. And like, it's been a good season up until this point, and it was nice to have some drama in Canada. But I just feel like the next few races, we're going to see some good racing.
Do you think that Hamilton is too far in the distance?
I think points-wise, it's not looking brilliant. Sebastian's 60 points behind, so that's more than about 2.5 wins behind Lewis Hamilton. And at this early stage of the season, that's not looking brilliant. But bigger points tallies have been overturned in the past. And there's still, 14 races to go? So there's still a long way to go in this championship. And, you know, one DNF for Lewis, and it can all change. At the moment, it's not looking likely. I know Mercedes had the engine problems in Canada, but like, they've been otherwise bulletproof. So I think to rely on one DNF, and really Ferrari need two DNFs to really be able to close the gap quickly, it's looking unlikely. But I just Canada's given me a real bounce. I've got a real buzz again about Formula 1, because I just feel like we're going to get some good racing again.
Wonderful stuff. Well, lots to look forward to. Give us another clue, by the way, on our Name That Race. We're coming to the end of the show. I think I know, maybe. What's a final clue?
Well, I'll give them all to you again as this is the last one. So I first said it was a race that lasted over 4 hours, and it was the longest race in F1 history. Jenson Button and Lewis Hamilton, then McLaren teammates, collided along the pit straight. Jenson Button pitted 6 times, and then he went and passed Sebastian Vettel on the final lap to win the race. So he was last at one point, pitted 6 times, passes Vettel on the last lap, and wins the Grand Prix.
And this is in Canada?
In Canada, yes. It's in the last 10 years. There you go, I've given you a bonus clue.
In the last 10 years?
Yeah.
Okay, 20, I'm right so far. 12.
1 year out.
Oh, no!
1 year. I mean...
What was it?
2011.
Oh, okay. Okay, not too far out. I'll take that.
I'd like to think you could see the race, you just couldn't quite identify.
No,
what
I could.
Year
I could.
In,
I so. Genuinely remember the high drama of it and how long it went on for. But it's too long ago, Lawrence. My mind is clouding over, and we must look forward for exactly that reason. We must look forward to France. We've had a wonderfully comprehensive, analysis of it there from Chris Medland and Stuart Codling. But if you had to identify one key point in the circuit that could be a real flashpoint, where would you go for?
I think there's a couple, really. I think it's the first corner, and it's particularly at the start, just because you've obviously got the cars bunched up, and there's a long enough run down to the first corner, as Chris mentioned, where it could get exciting. We saw in Canada it was a shorter run, and there's a bit of contact and a bit of excitement and a bit of changing in positions. So I think that would be a point. And I think the straight is quite important, because that's where I think Ferrari are going to make their gains. And that will also be where the DRS, which is this overtaking aid, will come into most use. So I feel like that's where we might see a bit going on.
Well, it's been tipped for excitement. I think it certainly will be if Canada were anything to go by. Lawrence, you're backing Hamilton resignedly.
I think so. I think this is Lewis's race, but it's going to be close. I've got to keep saying it. It's going to be close.
It's going to be close. And you will have to tune in next week to the Motorsport Show right here on Love Sport Radio to find out if we've got an upset to tell you about.